This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Oral. A-U-R-A-L.
What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in the Michael Winslow collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course. Stole across by Bismarck. No, was it? Bismarck was on it?
Bismarck.
No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck, yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the things.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I'm just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
doing.
Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard. Like my click, 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 click. And all these bad bitches, man, they want the... They want the... They want the... Stick them up. Yeah, I'm talking, yeah. Yeah, I'm talking re. Yeah, I'm talking B. Nigga, I'm talking me. Yeah, I'm talking boss. I ain't talking Khalees. Your money too short, you can't be talking to me. Yeah, I'm talking LeBron. We ballin' our family tree. Good music, drug dealing, cousin, ain't nothing.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. Gonna get you here live on this Monday evening. This snowy, shitty, cold, frigid Monday evening. Scott Criscola, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Always a pleasure. And welcome, Place to Be Nation, to episode 360 of the Place to Be Podcast. Wow. 360. I haven't said it yet, so screw it. I'm going to say it now. 40 till four bills.
Yeah, 2018 coming
soon. With another 70,000 podcasts in between. But always a pleasure, JR. How are you?
We'll have five more come and go before we get to 400 new podcasts. Fade away.
How are you? How was your weekend? I know your shoulders are sore from heavy workout today out in the driveway.
And it's still going. Like, the frustrating part is when you finish and it's still, you turn around and there's like more on the freaking ground because you've already, already shoveled to clean it up and you're feeling good. And then you turn around and another half an inch to an inch has fallen just in the time you've been doing that. So I'm sure I'll be back out tomorrow morning before I go to work. But it was, quite the workout today.
Yeah. And the doctor was home, working home today, and he went out a few times as well, and I helped him out a little bit. It ended here in our neck of the woods about 6, so I'm guessing, what, about 7:30 probably stopped where you are?
Because I came in around 6, and it was still coming down. So I think around 7:30, but I just saw someone put on Facebook that kind of lives near me, and she said that it's still snowing, and she's not that far away, so I don't know what's going on, if it's snowing again now or what.
It's definitely stopped here. In fact, the guy's plowing out here in my parking lot, cleaning everything off. So this mound, I should take a picture of it and post it. This mound between my house and the house on the other side of the property. I mean, this thing is fucking, it's got to be at least, 15 feet high. It's pretty big. But in any event, pleasure, JR, as always. And let's think about warmer locales. Even though we are in, ironically, February for tonight's pay-per-view, we are in a nice venue, although... when we talk about it, when they did outside shots.
Hey, what is going on here?
I thought today was a snow day. Shouldn't you be home? When they did outside shots of where we are tonight, JR, it even seemed cloudy and gray there. And I thought that city was like the perfect weather city, that or
no.
San Diego. But
San Francisco, that's not perfect weather.
Not really, no.
It gets cold there, it gets windy, rainy. I mean, it's beautiful, I'm sure, but it's definitely San Diego's the one you always hear that has the pristine weather here around.
Pristine. Yeah. Anyway, tonight, inside, of course, hearing Beldo means we are in the Vintage Vault this evening. And tonight, a memorable main event. of a not memorable show as we have a little Latino redemption.
You got it.
Latino redemption. This was a weird show, actually, because the open was, they did like a thing in the ring and then went to the open. So
yeah.
Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, the PIC and I bring you No Way Out 2004. Clearly, of all the February shows that have ever happened, this one solely carried by a main event and a decent one undercard match. But other than that, you probably think to yourself, I don't remember a single match anywhere on this card. And there was actually a huge moment on this show that I didn't remember until I watched it today, but we'll get to that.
I feel like this happens a lot now with these February shows and the stretch where everyone's kind of, you remember Rumble, then you remember what happened to Mania. I feel like these February, because a lot of them are SmackDown only now for the next few years, so they easily get kind of just lost in time when you move along.
Yes. In fact, the next, I guess it would be the next 3 years, we'll have that that situation. And then 2007, it changes. But all right. And a fascinating venue tonight because it's historical overall in wrestling, but not for you and I.
Coming home!
February 15th. Pretty early. 2004. Live from the Cow Palace.
Don't make a mess of my house.
Technically, Daly City, California, but it's I guess unofficially, it's a suburb of San Francisco. Now, again, not a venue we're familiar with, JR, because this is the first ever pay-per-view in this building, but not...
The first WWE pay-per-view.
WWE pay-per-view,
WCW was there a lot.
Yes, there were a few... I think Super Brawl was there for a few years. In fact, I just... 97 was the first one there, and I think there were a couple more.
Yeah, I think 97, 98 for sure, and 99, I believe, was there.
Yeah, yep. But this is a debut for WWE in this building, but certainly not a debut for wrestling in this building. Very legendary. Give us the skinny.
Originally called the California State Livestock Pavilion, now known as the Cow
Palace.
There I am. It's an indoor arena. Holds 12,953 for hoops. Opened April 1941. Operated by the California Department for Food and Agriculture. Coordinates 37-42-24 North, 122-25-7 West.
That was the address when it opened.
All right, here are your tenants. The San Francisco Bulls of the ECHL played there for a couple of years. The San Jose Wolves of the AIFA played there for a year. The San Francisco Warriors of the NBA played there from 62 to 64 and then again 66 to 71. The San Francisco Seals of the WHL. San Jose Sharks of the NHL played there for a couple of years while they built their new Shark Tank.
Yep.
San Francisco Spiders of the IHL. The Grand National Rodeo has been there every year since 1941.
Woohoo! Zippity-doo!
The 1960 NCAA Men's Division I basketball tournament was there. Of course, San Francisco was kind of a force, right, back in the day?
Yes, in the late 50s, Bill Russell and Casey Jones played for the Dons of San Francisco.
Back when Holy Cross was a powerhouse.
That's right, when Bob Cousy was there, when Holy Cross was actually ranked.
San Jose Earthquakes of the NASL, the San Francisco Fog of the MISL, American Idol was there for a few years, X Factor, and College National Finals Rodeo was there for a year as well.
Yeah, and I believe, JR, you said the San Francisco Warriors, but I think Golden State played there briefly in the, I don't know, late 90s, I think, when their normal arena, the Oakland Arena, I guess now it's the Oracle Arena, I think was being renovated or something. I think they played there for a couple of years, like in, I don't know, 98, 99 or 2000, something like that. Sometime in the last like 15 years.
So Super Bowl was there 97, 98 and 2000, not 99.
Okay. Yeah, I just watched 97 last week.
The Cow Palace has a Daly City address, and except for the very northwest corner of the parking lot, which is in the San Francisco border, it lies entirely within Daly City, like you mentioned. I remember, Scott, there was a TV taping here, and a lot of it aired on the prime time before WrestleMania 6. It was that one where Gorilla and Bobby were in the Sky Dome.
Yep. Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And I remember because Matt had it on tape, and I used to always watch it a lot. and it had a Red Rooster Ted DiBiase match that was from there. And I always remember because Jesse, there's like a fat woman in the crowd, and he goes like, I guess I know why we call it the Cow Palace now. And that line is always stuck with me. It was really good. Do you know who opened their first North American concert tour by playing at the Cow Palace?
It's definitely not the Grateful Dead, because I'm sure they played there a myriad of times.
It was August 19th, 1964.
Rolling Stones?
No, it was the Beatles.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. Jackson 5 played their second ever concert there.
Hmm. The Grateful Dead played there probably a boatload of times.
The Who played there, and Keith Moon passed out from an overdose of horse tranquilizers.
Yes, I know that story. And I think it was in, like, what was it, 75?
73, November 73.
And Pete, I remember this. It's on the documentary I have. Pete Townsend actually had to go on the mic and ask the crowd, are there any drummers?
Yes, a fan completed the group set that yeah. evening. Scott Halpin.
Yeah. What was his name?
Scott Halpin.
Okay.
The Allman Brothers Band played there New Year's Eve, 73, with Grateful Dead members sitting in.
Yes. Yep.
Yep. Stones played there in 75. Kiss and Cheap Trick played there in 77. Pink Floyd in 75. The Runaways performed their last ever concert for their breakup.
Yep.
Runaways. Neil Diamond fell on stage, couldn't get up, 1979.
Oh, no.
He had a non-malignant tumor close to his spine.
Oof.
Prince played there in 85. Fleetwood Mac in 87. Nirvana played there twice, 91, 93, for a Bosnian rape benefit.
Uplifting. Yes. That sounds like the Super Bowl commercial.
I know, I said it should have been on the Super Bowl. Yes,
should have been a Super Bowl commercial.
Of the Nirvana Bosnian rape convention.
Nationwide could have sponsored it. Nationwide has Bosnian rape victims. Yeah, we'll talk about the, I'm sure, sports alone. Two different sports shows this week on here on Place to Be Nation, but we'll talk about that later. Yeah, and of course, a legendary venue for professional wrestling. Roy Shire, legendary a promoter of that territory. Ray Stevens, Pat Patterson.
Yep. Didn't Piper start? I know he was in Oregon for a while. I thought, didn't he start, or did he start in
I'm
LA?
Pretty sure. No, I think Roy, you know, I think he did start with Roy Shire, and then he went up to, the hell's his name? Don Owen, I think was
Don
the
Owen was
promoter.
Yeah.
So, but I think he did start in San Francisco first, you're right. But yeah, legendary wrestling venue and territory.
Yeah, he was he worked in Hollywood with Gene LaBelle and Mike LaBelle, and then went to Roy Shire's NWA San Francisco Wrestling.
Yep. And then he went to Don Owen in Portland. So yeah, who was a legendary wrestling venue, but for us here in WWE...
Blassie was L.A., right?
Blassie was L.A., yeah, with Jim Lont, with John Tolos and all those guys, yeah. He was with the LaBelles. San Francisco, JR, was also the first, and I remember this very well because this is where I used to get pissed off about when we have this debate on past podcasts about the whole Hogan Flair should have been WrestleMania 8. I believe Cow Palace was the first venue of the house show tour that the two of them had. And, you know, oh my God, they were supposed to tear the house down and didn't. I'm thinking, why would you start this, you know, why would you even have them on house shows? And even worse, why would you have them out in San Francisco, which is not a...
Right, why not be in the Northeast or even be in an NWA?
I know. Instead, they were out there. So I always remember that about the Cow Palace, too. The place looks like a barn. Mm-hmm. Like there's big red letters, Cow Palace, on the it doesn't
this
look
is
like
the only pay-per-view WWE would have there. Never go back.
Yeah. Yep. No, they wouldn't. Really weird. Your attendance, 11,000. So a little... I mean, I'm sure it was a sellout. In fact, Michael Cole says during the first match that there's standing room only. So, but you said it's in terms of seats, I think it's slightly less, right? Didn't you say it was like 12,900 and something? So, not total a sellout in terms of seats, but obviously with the set and all that stuff.
Yeah, 12,953 for basketball, 1189 for hockey. So.
Okay. Your buy rate, 0.5, which it's kind of low for this stretch. I don't know, 0.5.
Buy rates and ratings are starting to sink a little bit here in 05.
Yeah.
You know, SmackDown only show. Big match on top. Not much else going on.
Yeah.
Hot Rumble. Have they been started doing the... I don't think they had done that yet, right? Where you could order all three and get the deal?
I don't think they did that till 05. Okay. I don't think they did it here.
I know they did that Road to WrestleMania deal or whatever where you could.
I don't think they. Maybe they did it here? I'm pretty sure they did. I know they did it in 05. I don't remember if they did it in 04. I'm pretty sure they did it in 05, though. I remember watching this pay-per-view, JR. I don't know if you were. You might have been off that night, but I remember watching this in the NBA Master Control Room.
No, I was with you. We watched it together.
04? I know we watched 05 together.
Yeah, I came in for the main event. I didn't see the whole show. I came in. I remember the guys called me in for the main event.
That's right. So it was back-to-back years then. Okay. Yeah, so we sat in the... that's right. We didn't watch the undercard. We were doing stuff. That was because it was NBA All-Star Weekend.
Yep.
2004. I believe that was in Denver. Was that in L.A.? One All-Star game. The 2 years that we did the All-Star game, one was at Staples. One was at...
wasn't that the snow weekend?
No, 05 was the snow weekend. The year after.
No, I don't think so. Weekend. It was my old apartment. It was 04. Yeah,
really?
05, I would have been in the new one.
At Avalon.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was 04.
All right, so it was back-to-back.
You came, you stayed over, and then we watched the... we did that, and then we watched the pay-per-view that night, and then you came over, and we snowed in, went through all the
That's
tapes.
Right. Yes, our pal Mr. Graham's tapes. Mm-hmm. Going pretty legendary there. Okay, and your announcers at ringside, Michael Cole and Taz, who were on their game. But I do remember Michael Cole saying that they were doing standing-room-only seating or something weird. Mm-hmm. Now, the show opened... this doesn't affect later, but the show does not open with... It's one of the few times that the show...
I got some Sutton notes I want to hit, and then we'll talk about
that. Okay, right. Let's do... Yeah, I kind of threw him off today because I told him that we were doing it.
All right, well, here's the first ever show in the Cow Palace, 6-10-85. George Wells defeated Jim Neidhart by DQ. Brian Blair, who's the guest on next week's Kevin Kelly Show, defeated Rene Goulet. Herschel Hoffman defeated Jerry Monty. Tony Atlas defeated Guy Lambert.
Guy Lambert.
It's probably Guy Lambert. Maybe I should say Guy Lambert.
Guy Lambert.
Jimmy Snuka and Paul Orndorff defeated Bob Orton Jr. and Alexis Smirnoff, who was substituting for Roddy Piper. Bret Hart. Bret Hart.
Is he the guy that does the commercial? Oh, that's Yakov Smirnoff.
Yes.
That was the guy that used to do the commercials.
On Place to Be podcast, Scott makes sense. Bret Hart defeated Gama Singh. The U.S. Express defeated Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkoff. And, of course, the final pay-per-view at the venue before this one was Super Bowl 2000 on February 20th. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the sponsor for this bad boy?
I don't remember it on today. I wonder if they edited it. WWE.com? No, I don't know.
THQ MX Unlimited.
MX Unlimited. I don't remember that
game.
No
fucking clue.
No clue either.
The song was Crossing Borders by Rey Mysterio.
Yes, well, that leads us to one of our matches later.
Yes, true.
That song.
It did.
So there you go.
It wasn't done yet.
Oh, so he had
quick
more
to move on. Roll call: our world champion Brock Lesnar, U.S. champion the Big Show, tag team champions Rikishi and Scotty Too Hotty.
What?
Defeated the Bashams on February 5th. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. That was in Cleveland.
Yep.
And Rey Mysterio is still our cruiserweight champion. Released from the company, Ernest Miller announced his retirement on February 9th. Had two matches on TV. His record was 0-0-2. Or 0-2-0.
He was in the Rumble.
0-2-0. Lamont, his bodyguard there, was released on, or his hype man, released on the same day, February 9th as well. Chris Benoit had been traded to Raw as part of his Royal Rumble stuff that we'll talk about next month.
Mm-hmm.
On February 6th, Scott,
mm-hmm.
it was a big family addition to the world of wrestling.
Mm.
Do you know who that was?
The big family addition? The world of wrestling, yes, I believe Shane McMahon and his beautiful wife, whose name escapes me.
Marissa.
I have her face in my head. Yes, Marissa welcomed their son into the world.
Yeah, Declan James McMahon, born on February 6th. February 13th, which we'll talk about in a minute as well, Sable and Tori Wilson were announced as being co-cover girls on Playboy magazine.
Mm-hmm.
SmackDown have reached 235 episodes, Velocity 90, TNA weekly pay-per-views at 84. On the No Way Out Heat, Akio, Sakota, and Tajiri defeated Billy Kidman, Paul London, and the Ultimo Dragon.
Mm-hmm. Great job, Mr. Sutton, considering you mouthed off to me and said you didn't want to be rushed. Mm-hmm. So it was very nice. Yeah, I will. I had my thought, and Sutton ruined it. All right. I know what I was saying. Normally, when pay-per-views start in the arena before playing their opening piece, it's either A, WrestleMania, you know, when they do the America the Beautiful or Star Spangled Banner, or it's something honoring somebody dying or something patriotic, like Unforgiven 01 or something like that. But when it came on the network today, I thought they had done some kind of editing thing and had to edit out the open or some jazz, because it opens and then out comes the aforementioned Tori Wilson and Sable, both in slinky little black dresses and you know, pumped the crowd up and what have you. Torrey was looking literally perfect. Literally perfect. Sable's voice still is like nails on a fucking chalkboard. 5 years didn't.
She's stuck around longer than you remembered.
Was she what?
Yes. She's stuck around longer than you remembered.
Yeah, I don't remember her at all in 04.
Yeah, she hung around a lot longer than you think.
Yeah, I thought she was gone by the end of 03. But she was pretty hot, Tori Wilson. Literally perfect. Then we go to the Open, back to the Cow Palace, and let's dive in. Our first match.
So, by the way, you just mentioned they came out. So they pushed the Playboy spread.
Yeah, they
opened
the
show. Yeah, yep. And that's it. So
yeah, and there were alternate covers. There were two covers. One had Sable standing and Tori like kneeling in front of her provocatively, and then the other cover had them in reverse. So there were actually two covers of that Playboy. Okay. We open with our first title match of the evening, the WWE Tag Team Championship, a.k.a. the Blue Belts. Your champions, as JR mentioned, Rikishi and Scotty Tuhati. No! Kicking in their inner fucking 2000. taking on the former champions and their manager in a handicap match. Why don't we give us a background here, JR, without gnashing your teeth too much.
Kevin gnashing my teeth left and right.
And gnashing your teeth, yes.
Rikishi and Scotty Tuhati upset the Bashams on the 2-5 SmackDown from Cleveland. The following week, Danny defeated Scotty, that's you, in a singles match. After the bell, Rikishi was about to hit Shaniqua with a bonsai drop, but the Bashams saved their woman before Rikishi could drop it. Well, this is her pay-per-view debut match. It's also the final appearance for Linda Miles. After this show, she'd be taken off TV and assigned to OVW, where she earned a reputation for having a bad attitude. She would be released in November. She currently lives in Cincinnati. She's a substitute teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, and I believe... clean up that attitude working with these kids.
I know. And I know that she was... I think she might be an assistant coach on the Cincinnati women's hoop team, too. I think. I liked Linda Miles a lot. I was kind of bummed when she left. I liked her. She would have taken bumps and everything, but somebody must have gotten her head, and she must have been one of those ones who.
She works in Philadelphia now.
Oh, so that's so we'll have to fix that. Huh? So maybe
no,
she's not.
No, I'm joking.
Oh.
take a look up because the joke's flying over your head right now.
I didn't expect you to go there.
Yeah.
Let me. Okay. So. So I missed her. I liked Linda Miles.
You're the only one.
I don't know. Something about her I liked. Well, not everybody liked her. My eyes are getting weary.
My back is getting tight. Jobbing our tag titles to these two artifacts tonight. I don't care, because all I want to do is cash my check and drive right home to you. That's what I'd be doing, too, if I was listening to these fucking idiots for the title. It's cash and checks, the Bashams, Doug and Danny. Awful tag title run. So played out.
Why?
They're back to their old music from like 2000. Ugh. Rikishi's even fatter than he had been. Uses his power to dominate early, beats on Shaniqua too. Scotty goes for the worm, but Shaniqua hammers him from behind. Solid double teams from the Bashams. Scotty gets a hot, makes a hot tag to Rikishi, who cleans house. We get a good double powerbomb saved by the Bashams to save Shaniqua from a bonsai splash, but Rikishi fights through it and hits the bonsai eventually for the win. Kind of weird to watch today with all, you know, we've talked about this, the prevalence of the man-on-woman violence going on around this time, but
yes.
This was a weird one, too. Rikishi squashes her with the bonsai. Really lame title run, and my lord, how far has the SmackDown tag division fell off a cliff?
I know.
What a
2003,
thud.
They were red hot.
Starting from when the belts were created, right through 03. I mean, you went from the SmackDown 6 to the World's Greatest Tag Team, Kidman and Ray. I mean, just think of all the teams they had in the mix there. Eddie and Tajiri, the Guerreros in general, when it was just Eddie and Chavo. And then just in the fall, it started to really taper off, and now look where we are here. Rikishi and Scotty Tuhati in February 2004. 4 years after Rikishi was at his hottest peak. And just still trolling around now, tag team champions. Like, I don't even care if it was like a thank you run. It just felt so unneeded.
Yeah.
You watch them do the same shtick. Rikishi's fat ass doing the same dance, the worm, the song.
I didn't even know Scotty Tuhati was still with the company.
He needed to go. Had he already had cancer? Was that after?
Because
I was trying to remember if this was like, all right, he survived cancer, Welcome back. Here's the title run. But I feel like that was after.
I feel like it was after, too. Let's take a look at that.
No, it's not in his Wikipedia page.
Oh, no. Okay. I just don't get it. I don't get it at all. And meanwhile, you have two pretty good teams later on in the card.
Yeah, the neck wrestling surgery each other too, and came back.
Okay. I mean, you had two really great teams wrestle later on in the card.
Yeah. I know they were trying to eat up matches, but maybe they would have been better served just making this like a four-way with those two teams and these two teams. At least you hide Rikishi and Scotty in there a little bit. This just felt... It was bad enough that they're already champions. I mean, maybe they wanted to do the Linda thing, I guess. I don't get it. I don't get why they're even a team in the mix. Never mind.
No,
what
I don't either. And Michael and Taz... Maybe all my life I will be driving home to you. What a great show. It's just amazing how it shows kind of the holes in this roster.
Yeah.
Boy, SmackDown looked so loaded just a few months earlier. And really the only major move was Benoit going to Raw. And we'll document that in the next vault. But it seems like after that, like everything else just went in that shitter. Like the roster just seemed to get so thin so fast. I mean, there were a lot of cruisers in 03. But it just seems like this roster is so thin.
Yep.
And they ate up a good 15 minutes for a segment that we'll talk about in a little bit. Just so weird. And then this next match we'll talk about, like, I don't know.
No,
so it has, weird.
It's thinned out very quickly.
Big time. And I feel a lot of it's the cruisers. I mean, we do have a cruiserweight title match later on in the show, but still.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, really weird. All of a sudden, it just
seemed
like...
Well, the main event scene is tapered off, so now we've kind of had a bump guys up. So whereas like Eddie would have been in the mid card, Benoit is now gone. You know, we're using three of our higher profile guys in one match later on. Taker's gone. We had all the Vince stuff on SmackDown before, so that's all gone. So a lot of that storyline kind of stuff and the top level has really tapered off. So now we're left with some of these undercard guys and cruisers and tag teams filling the slots that they normally didn't have to.
Right. So that's probably why the buy rate was so low, because this undercard just seemed so underwhelming that people were like, eh, Brock's probably going to win anyway. Or maybe not. Who knows? But I think that's another reason why the buy rate was so lousy. Anyway, Rikishi and Scotty Tuhati, for some godforsaken reason, retains their WWE.
And that's not the last time we're going to be saying that in the in these reviews, sadly. But.
So dreadful. So dreadful. All right, next up. A relationship gone awry, and another one of my favorites who didn't last much longer in the company. Tell us how we got to this sad relationship breakup, JR.
Nydia was blinded by Tajiri's black mist on the 10/16 episode of SmackDown. After weeks of miscommunication and abuse from Noble, Nydia accidentally cost him a title match with Rey Mysterio on the 129 SmackDown. The next week, a heel Nydia appeared during Noble's match with Kidman, threw all of his inheritance money and credit cards into the crowd, angering her boyfriend. The next week, Noble came out and officially kicked Nydia out of the double wide, claiming she had sucked him dry of his money. Nydia came out to respond and had the mink coat Noble bought her fed through a wood chipper as Noble freaked out. The match was set for the pay-per-view with the stipulation being that Noble would have to be blindfolded.
That was funny when she... To take the time on a SmackDown to bring out a wood chipper for this feud.
Right.
So funny. I liked Nydia.
Yeah, we know. She had tits. You like her.
And I love all the divas except Linda Miles. Well, I liked Linda Miles and she didn't. I mean, it gave Jamie Noble something to do. I mean, he was still a valuable cruiser on the roster and he wouldn't have... losing this match would have been stupid, so... It made sense. Otherwise, really was nothing here to talk about, no?
Well, the feud came to a head, and Nydia no longer blind. I thought it was pretty fun mid-card fodder with the good character stuff. I think only because we've gotten to know Noble and Nydia pretty well over the last year, so it kind of made this count instead of just being two new characters that we didn't really get into. I thought the stip kind of fit the storyline, which was good. Noble's really good in the role. Nidhi attacks early. They use some psychology. A little faster pace than the last blindfold match we saw, which is Jake Roberts and Rick Martel at WrestleMania 7. But, of course, here Nidhi is not blindfolded. So she plays trick. She pulls down Noble's pants, does fake sex gyrations. Noble cheats and peeks, yanks Nidhi off the top rope, and hooks his reverse sleeper in for the win. I thought the match was actually well booked. I thought Noble needed to win. He showed some ass. He obviously couldn't lose this. Another match that was kind of tough to watch with the man-on-woman violence. But for what it was, I thought it was actually pretty well done.
I mean, it wasn't too bad. I mean, it was a lot of, you know, histrionics and
but it moved quick. It wasn't like I said, it wasn't like WrestleMania 7 where they really dragged it out. They moved fast through it.
And you love the WrestleMania 7 match too, so
It's different. I mean, Jake Roberts and Rick Martel, it's a different feud than Jamie Noble and Nidhi.
Well, yeah, that's quite true. Yes.
I mean, this
would have been great if Nidhi had white contact lenses. It would have been kind of neat.
And they basically ripped off the storyline and redid it here, but.
Yeah.
This one has moved a little bit quicker. It's half the time of that one, and they don't meander around as much.
Yeah. And, you know, Jamie Noble cheats, peeks through the, takes the blindfold off while the ref's not looking, finds her, puts a submission on, and she taps out. So Jamie Noble wins, and it's pretty, pretty uneventful. Noble obviously trying to get back into the cruiserweight championship chase. Which we'll get to the cruiserweight title in a little bit. Next one, next match. We continue talking about the struggling.
You get a good match coming up after this one.
Yes. Well, if you're Matt Rotella, absolutely not. All right. Next up, tag match between a team that you would think should be in the tag chase, but of course they had plans for all these guys on this in this match, so. Not involved in the tag situation. Not booked. Not involved.
Read my poems.
JR's Tag Team of the Year for 2003. Mr. Haas, Mr. Benjamin, world's greatest tag team. And the APA, complete with Bradshaw's finely coiffed hair and his fully wrapped up arm.
It's still good. They should have had them in Rikishi and Scotty fight in like a Legends match. That's pretty much what they were at this point.
Legends match.
Should have had
the legacy
museum.
Of the Attitude Era match.
Should have wrestled in the museum. Artifacts match. Attitude Era Artifacts match.
Wrestling in the Stanford warehouse.
So Tsunaki wasn't in there, too.
Oh, for Christ's sakes, how'd we get here? Ugh.
On the 212 SmackDown, Bradshaw defeated Shelton Benjamin, but Bradshaw's arm was severely injured by Benjamin, setting up a weakness for this match.
And that's it.
Yeah, did you feel like even World's Greatest was a little... I mean, I don't want to say played out. I think they just feel lost because they're kind of suddenly without legit competition.
Yes.
All the teams they had to work with back in 03 are all vanished, and now they have the old men, and then Doug and Danny delivered packages. And that's really pretty much it.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you see who the tag champs are, and Cole's like, you know, Taz's like, the winner of this match gets a future tag title shot, Cole! And you're like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I think
sure
anyone...
It's on APA.
Anyone could have gotten a tag title shot at this point.
Yeah, but it's APA, which means shouldn't have this been like a turmoil match?
I know, right? Where they could, or seven more teams. Where they could win. APA, very played out too. Lots of stale feels mixed in here. Roster needed churning bad. So like you kind of hinted at, of course, is what's upcoming after Mania was desperately needed at this point. Because SmackDown is on its last legs, it feels like, in this show.
I know.
APA opens up in control. They work over Shelton. The world's greatest tag team finally takes over. They start working Farouk's arm. Bradshaw gets a nice powerbomb on Shelton during the comeback. He hits the clothesline from hell with a hurt arm, and he can't really cover, so Shelton catches him with a kick for the win. I thought it was a good match. A solid match. I thought it was the right decision. I was really nervous that the APA was going to go over like they always do, so I was glad to see Shelton and Haas defeat them cleanly. Stiff match, though. I thought both teams actually looked pretty good in this one. I thought that they hit each other pretty hard. They had some pretty good chemistry, so much better than... our tag title match with those teams that were involved. These guys seem to blend in a little bit better.
Absolutely terrible. And but at least, I mean, World's Greatest Tag Team won strictly because they're trying to put those guys over for their future. But this is, I think, officially the last APA match. So,
well, no, they're at Mania.
Oh, that's right. They're in. Well, I guess they have to be in that match. Since
right.
Was,
they needed them.
No other teams. Yeah, that's right.
The last whatever, one on 2-on-2 tag match.
Yeah, team on team, team versus team. Yeah. nothing to laugh at here because it's pretty dreadful. All right. So the world's greatest tag team wins. Match is a little under 7.5 minutes. And speaking of, Ron Simmons was just on the screen on Raw right now. Damn. So there you go. World's greatest tag team wins. I mean, it was a. I didn't mind the match. It was pretty stiff. I mean, they were hitting the crap out of each other. Mm-hmm. So I mean, the match itself was entertaining. But I mean, you could just see that the.
I mean, this is a fine use for APA though. Like if they're just gonna have hard hitting matches to put over young guys. The problem was over the last year or so, they hadn't been doing that.
Right.
They had been winning matches they shouldn't have, and we're in the tag title picture and everything else. Like, this is fine. I mean, this, okay, we got these two young guys trying to keep them strong for certain reasons. You know, go out there, have a good match, sell the arm, put them over. Like that was fine to me. And the fact that they were almost wrapping up anyway made sense that they used him this way. Whereas on the other side of the coin, you have Scotty and Rikishi holding gold and knocking off young teams, which was very counterproductive.
Yeah, precisely. All right, a segment coming up here that I honestly did not even remember until I watched it today. Tell us what happened with a special guest in the front row and our GM.
Sure. Goldberg arrives in the arena as an invited guest. He has been suspended from Raw by Steve Austin, the sheriff, so he was given a ticket here to come to SmackDown. Paul Heyman comes out to confront him. Oh, actually, Austin gave him the ticket, right? But didn't he suspend him and then he gave him the ticket to show up?
He gave him the ticket and he goes,
don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Right, like, but he's suspended
like
him for his own good.
With midgets.
He's suspended for his own good kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
So Paul Heyman, the GM, comes out to confront him. Brock comes out as well and baits Goldberg to get in the ring. The crowd is really hot for the showdown here. Goldberg finally gets in the ring after Brock pushes one too many buttons. We get a brief brawl that ends with a jackhammer. And Goldberg gets arrested and tossed out of the arena. So I thought it was really kind of a genius move by Heyman and Brock. And some smart booking where they baited Goldberg. They knew that he couldn't resist, so they got him to come in and put his hands on Brock to get him arrested so he wouldn't interfere in the match later.
Right.
So I thought that was really smart and well done there. And like I said, the crowd was super into it. So you would have thought, I mean, this match had money written all over it, Goldberg and Brock. Hardcore Holly comes out, and Brock runs away, which I thought was kind of goofy. I know he just got beat up by Goldberg and he was vulnerable, but
It's
like, why are we still making Holly a threat for Brock Lesnar?
Oh, really?
Like, didn't
Jesus
we get past
Christ.
That last month? Do we need that?
Yeah, exactly. So, all right. But I never remembered that segment. Did not remember that segment at all. And it made more sense for the main event later. All right, next up, another time filler of a match, because Hardcore Holly's in a match, which is why he ran out, taking on Rhino. How in the hell do we get here?
On 212, Hardcore Holly defeated Rhino by DQ, and Rhino refused to stop punching Holly. The rematch was added to the show on Sunday Night Heat. Stop punching him. No! All right.
You got a match.
Holly jumps Rhino in the aisle. Holly goes to work on Rhino's repaired neck. Rhino counters by going to the midsection. And just a straight-up brawl. Rhino very focused strikes, deliberate. Two veterans that know what to do. Holly hits a nice running drop kick. Rhino cuts off the comeback with a good spine buster. Hardcore Holly rolls to the floor after the gore, catches Rhino coming back in, hits the Alabama slam for the win. And Scott, I liked this match. It was hard-hitting, solid, good focused offense by each guy. The outcome didn't matter, so this is like a football game. We don't give a shit about either team. You're just kind of enjoying the hitting. Like, that's what it felt like to me. Like, I had no dog in the fight. I didn't really care which of these bums won. But just seeing them beat the crap out of each other and really focus in with Rhino working the midsection, Holly working the neck, like both things made sense. I liked it. It felt like an old like WrestleMania match from the early years where they had two veterans just go out there for, whatever, 8 or 9 minutes and eat up some time and work a match that they knew how to work. So I enjoyed it. This is kind of my, I don't want to say hidden gem of the night, but kind of forgotten match of the night. Did you get the same?
I mean, I did. To me, this was the singles version of the tag match with World's Greatest Tag Team and APA. I mean,
even better.
Just two guys that went out and pummeled each other. A lot of fun.
Yeah, I liked it better. This is, I mean, honestly, maybe my third favorite match on the night. I don't know. I just, I really dug it. I thought they really put together a good match.
No, I liked it too because, again, I mean, you need to use this roster to fill out a pay-per-view card. Have these two guys go out and just freaking beat the shit out of each other for 10 minutes, and they pretty much did. So,
and you forget that they're even both. Well, Holly, you don't forget because he was in the title match, but Rhino, I mean, he's been MIA now for a while, so I know he was hurt, came back, and hasn't done much.
Has he really been on pay-per-view since
19?
Well, no, didn't he? He fought Benoit. No Mercy?
No. That was A-Train, wasn't it?
Oh, you're right. It was A-Train. So
I don't
Jesus
think he's been on since Mania.
And he hasn't been on camera since Vengeance. When he cost Benoit the... Will you stop? The...
Right, yeah. Oh, SummerSlam. He was in the four-way.
That's right, yep. And of course, before that, he was at Vengeance when he cost Benoit the U.S. title. So.
Yep.
Good use for both these guys. Just beat the shit out of each other and fill up 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. So, good job. And Hardcore Holly gets the win, and nobody cares. All right. The lights go out, JR.
Very cryptic.
Yeah, we got the... And then they're done. Get some pictures of Taker, of a certain ex-wrestler from...
Well, it's on a Taker.
Yeah, no Taker shots from like 96, 97.
Right, and it claims who will rise at WrestleMania, so... very strong tease that what was hinted at a year ago, remember, everyone thought he may be back as the dead man at the Rumble in 03, came back as the biker still. After being buried by Kane at Survivor Series, people started to think, maybe this is finally when he's going to return as the dead man. That became another selling point for WrestleMania, the return of Undertaker, possibly as the dead man.
Yep. And they showed Kane in the... in the clips, like with like weird, you know, like
I think they had already said it was one of those things where they never really said it, but they did, all of a sudden it was there that they were going to fight a Mania. You know what I mean? Like all of a sudden one week they're just like, and Undertaker returns to face Kane at WrestleMania. I was like, yeah, okay,
and then they had some pretty good skits on Raw. We'll get to that in the next.
Yeah, show. And Kane of course was shocked. You know, he thought Taker was dead and everything. We saw that at the Rumble.
I killed you. We'll get more into that. Next up. Our next title match. As the Cruiserweight Championship is on the line, your champion, the guy who is singing our...
National Anthem?
No. John Legend? No. The guy who sang our... or whose song the official song of the pay-per-view is, Crossing Borders. Our Cruiserweight Champion, Rey Mysterio. He successfully defended his title at the Rumble against Jamie Noble. Now taking on... No, not him. I don't think anybody can ever call Art O'Donnell a cruiserweight. A guy who got the his clock cleaned at the Royal Rumble by his uncle, and that is Chavo. How do we get here, JR?
On 2-5, Chavo Jr. told Paul Heyman he had issues with Rey Mysterio. Heyman granted Guerrero a match on the pay-per-view. Chavo promised to defeat Rey and rip off his mask. Heyman then told Chavo Sr. that he would have to face Rey later that night. Rey won the match, but the Guerreros would get the last laugh when Chavo Jr. assaulted Rey after the bell. The next week, when Rey faced off with Jerry, the Chavos came down to the ring to attack Rey again. Jorge Paez ran Jr. off and then dropped Sr. with a left hook. And Paez is a professional boxer that was friends with Rey Mysterio. After a pair of appearances on SmackDown, Rey brought him in here to be in his corner. Paez... Scott has had a total of 98 fights, 79 wins, 51 by knockout, 14 losses, and 5 draws. Are you a big Paez guy? Stay on your list.
I think I've ever had a watched him in a fight. To be honest with you, I remember him. I remember his name a lot on like Showtime. He had that weird haircut, the little tuft in his on the front of his head. But I didn't realize he had that many fights. Jesus, 91 fights.
I kind of picture the Chavos being like the Cowboys, Roger and his father, Senior. I want a feud between the Chavos and the Rogers, the Cowboys.
I can't see Cowboy Senior walking out to that. There's a little Brady jersey on. Okay. All right.
And Ray's fighting for Eddie here. Of course, against Chavo, kind of invokes that. Boxer Jorge Paez, like we mentioned, in the corner to offset Chavo Classic, as he'd become to be known. Chavo tries to slow things down early, but Rey picks up the pace until Chavo pancakes him to slow him down. Rey comes back on the 619, but Senior trips him up. Paez decks Senior to a big pop, gets tossed by the referee. Rey gets a strong flurry, but Chavo survives it. Chavo hits a nice backbreaker off the middle rope to counter Rey. Chavo works over the midsection with some nice comebacks mixed in. Rey gets a good desperation moonsault, but Chavo gets to the ropes. Nice slugfest on their knees leads to a gory special for a near fall. Rey gets a 619, goes for the West Coast pop, but Chavo rolls him to a really tight half crab. Senior comes back out after that, shoves Rey off the top, and Chavo steals the win. I like this match a lot. That was pretty good. I like that Chavo cheats to win to get the gold, as it should be with him. And a nice bounce back for Chavo after his Rumble debacle where he got beat the shit out of him by Eddie Guerrero.
Yes.
What did you think, though, of as good as this match was, were you done with Chavo at this point, or were you okay with him going to the Cruiserweight division and still being a player there?
I was okay with him going to the Cruiserweight division, but I didn't like him winning this match. To go from just getting, I mean, that seemed weird, just to go from him getting throttled at at the Rumble, and suddenly all of a sudden a month later he's rebuilt and beats Ray. I think I would like to have seen Ray with the belt going to Mania. So as much as I didn't mind him being repackaged, stuck in the Cruiser division, he fits that bunch of guys. I didn't think he should have won this match. I think Ray should have kept the title and moved on to Mania. Good match, though. Do you think 17 minutes a little long? I don't think so.
Not on this card.
A good amount of time. No.
Yeah, not on this card. This is
no. They needed to eat time. No, I agree.
Yeah.
But no, I thought it was a good match. There was nothing. I liked it a lot. Actually, I thought it was an exceptional match. I just didn't think Chavo should have won. I think Ray should have kept the title. But it was a good match.
Yeah, I felt that way at the time too. I mean, I think it was their way to try and rehab Chavo a little bit. And do you think do you think Chavo would have? How much did Chavo Sr. save him?
Like,
you think if it wasn't for him coming in and kind of get over, do you think Chavo Jr. would be in this position here?
No. I think people liked Chavo Classic.
So you don't think they would have tried to work to keep him? Because it seems like a guy they really like, and he gets a lot of chances over the years. So
I don't think... Yeah, no, definitely over the years. I think if Chavo was alone and we didn't have Classic, I think Ray would have fought somebody else on this pay-per-view. Hmm. I think Chavo would have probably come back.
I feel like
months.
They were going to try and rehab him regardless from the Eddie
stuff. Yeah, but I don't think he would have got the match here if it wasn't for Chavo Classic. I think he adds a lot to the... Because the whole, you know, the relationship between Ray and the Guerrero family and with Chavo Classic there kind of enhances that. And without Chavo Classic, Chavo Jr. would not have gotten this match, and I think we would have seen him probably like in May. But I didn't mind him in the match. He just shouldn't have won.
It's an odd,
I think Ray should have kept it.
Assumption. Man, may also even, it's like Rotella setting up the baby room on Martin Luther King Day weekend. Ah, yeah. Maybe May we'll see you.
Well, I was figuring May was the next SmackDown pay-per-view. So that was my
We'll see you November 13th.
November 13th, about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I think we would have seen him later on down the line if it wasn't for Classic. So, but it happens. And he is the new WWE Cruiserweight.
Now, if you want to crown him, then crown their ass.
Yeah. What happened to him? He's not Chavo Classic. All right, why don't we take a break?
Okay.
Because we have two matches left. Both are big double main events. We have a number one contenders match. And, of course, our WWE Championship match. But first, Dennis Green says, crown him with many words.
We'll talk to you in June
15th.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on PlaceToBeNation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcasts? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant.
Sorry.
The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pop. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week, join Marcus Vandenberg and myself for the world's most dangerous sports show and the program that's changing the game one show at a time, the Kings of Sport Podcast. Available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island, and look for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
Hey, this is Dr. Tom Pritchard, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast on the Place to Be Nation.
All right, Nation, we are back talking No Way Out 2004, SmackDown only pay-per-view. A couple matches left. First, we're going to take a stop by PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Matt Davis has a pretty cool piece on the top 15 WWE matches that never aired on TV or pay-per-view. These were all filmed and recorded and aired on Coliseum video cassettes, VHS tapes, but they never made it to the bigger stage, and maybe they should have. He goes through all the top 15 matches, he ranks them, and talks about what their significance could have been if they had been used in a different way. Also, if you're a comic nerd, we have you covered. As the hard-traveling fanboys, Greg and Nick were joined by Todd, Tim, and Russell. If you remember a couple months back, they did a giant comics draft where they drafted companies. They drafted so basically they built their own company by drafting artists and writers and characters. And now they're back, and they're each doing their pitch for how they would use all the people and things they drafted. So they're building their companies out. So comic fans, this is a must read for you. And, of course, go back and check out the draft as well. Real good old nerdy stuff in the good way. So be sure to check that out. Aaron George with his Wrestling Four Corners for the week of January 24th to January 30th. If you haven't checked that out yet, he watches Raw, NXT, SmackDown, Ring of Honor, and Impact. Breaks down what worked, what didn't, and what upset him on a profound level. Aaron is the man, so I highly recommend checking that out. And someday, Scott, I'm hoping, fingers crossed, you actually invite him back on Main Event. That's what I'm hoping for.
Perhaps
my ass. He'll actually be with us later this week. We'll talk about why in a minute.
Yes.
Brainbuster Pro Wrestling Quiz Show, Episode 1, hosted by your favorite, Johnny Sorrow, produced by British Matt Denton. It is a fun... If you like cheesy, old-school like quiz shows and trivia shows, this is... And you love wrestling. This is the podcast for you. Mm-hmm. We had our first group of contestants. We had our friend Will. We had Pete from Titans of Wrestling and Martin all competed through a different series of rounds. So basically, each round is a different game, and Johnny mixes up all the games. And if you're, like I said, if you like the cheesy quiz shows, you like wrestling, definitely check this out. It's a lot of fun. I don't want to spoil anything else for you, but it's a quick listen. Got me through some of the shoveling today. So a very entertaining piece of podcasting material. Mm-hmm. Greatest Talk of the 90s tournament, round four, wrapping up today. With day four being posted, so all of the entries are up, and that will close on Wednesday. So go get your votes in now. Mm-hmm. We are down to, 64? Yes, 64.
Yeah, 64.
Final 64 songs are up there, all the matchups for you to vote in. So please head over now, check that out, get your votes in before Wednesday when the polls close, and we whittle things down to round five. The Brad and Chad Show was back. Chad Campbell was joined by Ben Morse and me, Scott. We ranked all 28 Royal Rumble shows, so we've now done this for all the big four, Mania, SummerSlam, Survivor Series, the Rumble. We'll be back. We got some other ideas in the hopper coming up, so be sure to check that one out. Charles Williams is back with his This Week in 90s Wrestling, an excellent article for all wrestling historians and fans, looking at the week of February 1st till February 7th in the world of 90s wrestling. He has matches that he recommends. He includes clips of promos and angles and behind-the-scenes stuff, backstage and information that you may not have known. It's a must-read article there as well. A lot of cool stuff going on. PWO, PTBN Roundtable, looking at the top 100 matches on the WWE Network, part 2 of 5, with Stephen Graham, Pete, and Chad, and Charles. They went through and break that down. I want to give a shout-out to Charles as well. New baby daughter in the house for him.
Excellent.
To our buddy Charles.
Congrats. Yes.
Parv and Stephen Graham were also back with their All Japan Excite Series, episode number 4, looking at some classic All Japan matches from the early 90s. And all your usual pieces as well are Seinfeld, Still Real to Us, episode 2 of the History of Wrestling podcast with Graham Cawthon. Brad and Dan were back looking at the Rumble in 2015. Why did fans revolt now? Why didn't they in the past? They talk about how the Royal Rumble concept has evolved as well. So a lot of stuff going on, Graham, here. Pleased to be Nation. Scott, you had a new episode of The Main Event where you broke down the Rumble, kind of. Talked about a lot of other stuff with the Core Four. Sports Lounge had Rob Carpenter back. A little bit dated now, looking at the Super Bowl, but you can go back and see if they were right or wrong. Rob, of course, former Syracuse and NFL wide receiver, was back with the Cowboys, junior and senior, to talk that over. Logan Sisko had a new episode with the new installment written review of Monday Night Raw from November 23rd, 98. And, of course, our Vintage Vault Refresh series continued last week. Survivor Series 90. We're back this week with Rumble 91. So be sure to check that out. Kevin Kelly Show was up last week as well with Mark Briscoe, was our very special guest. So PlayStation.com, we guts it all. If you're interested in joining us in some written endeavors, you can hit us up at info@PlayStation.com. Please follow us at Facebook.com/PlayStation, Twitter, Place2BNation, and brand new Facebook page just for the Kevin Kelly Show. So if you could please head over and like that, you can do Facebook.com/ Kevin Kelly Show PTBN, trying to build up his brand with that. So if you are a fan of this show, I would ask you to please head over and like that page and do us a big old favor.
Absolutely. Definitely.
That's all I got.
There you go. PlaceToBeNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. Let's go back to San Francisco.
Going in there.
Home of the 2014 World Champion Giants. Up now, our...
I almost forgot like baseball exists. I think it's because I don't usually have... like a good college basketball team. So actually having a bridge now, usually football ends, the Jets are out, whatever, sometime in November. And then and I get to the Super Bowl and I'm like, all right, I'm dying for baseball to start. But with the Friars actually in good position to make the tournament and fighting for seeding and everything else, it's like I'm kind of booked now through March. So spring training and pitchers and catchers doesn't have the, you know, the hook that it usually does for me coming into February.
So you're involved.
Yeah.
You're booked and involved. That's right.
Well, I said hook.
Big game for the Friars Wednesday night. Friars Hoyas, big game.
Looking forward to it.
Yes. All right.
Already beat
another big match here.
Coming for you, baby.
Coming for you, baby. Speaking of Dusty, before we steer in,
how can I help you, Scott Jeffries?
Big additions to the network with it being Black History Month. the doctor and I were watching an episode of there was a full episode of Mid-South on the network. And this main event on this one episode, Ernie Ladd and the Samoans against Dusty, Andre, and JYD. How about that for a loaded main event?
Yeah, there was a Doug and DiBiase match on that, too.
Was it that episode?
Or are there a couple up?
Yeah, there's a couple up.
There was one that episode. Definitely had a Doug and DiBiase match.
It's actually, and I never realized, they actually called him Dugan.
Yes. Only in your nightmares, so they call him Dugan.
Fucking Dugan. Dugan! Dreadful. Oh, my God. And Bill Watts, he must be like a cyborg. He doesn't shut the fuck up during any of those matches. He literally talks nonstop. But anyway, a lot of new stuff added to the network for Black History Month. So check it out. All right. Next up, our number one contenders match. We need an opponent for somebody at Madison Square Garden on March 14th. So we have a triple threat match between three guys who feel they are more than deserving of being number one contender, JR. Tell us about it.
After losing a chance at Brock Lesnar's championship on the 129 SmackDown, Kurt Angle is forced to earn a WrestleMania main event slot another way. The following week, after a heated confrontation with all four men, Paul Heyman announced that Angle would face off with Big Show and John Cena, and the winner would earn a WrestleMania title match. Big spot here, Scott, for John Cena, who's quickly risen up the ladder. We saw him at the end of 03, where he basically turned face, starting to get cheered more and more, and starting to almost be put on equal with guys like Chris Benoit, Survivor Series, and since then had a solid showing at the Rumble. And here we are heading into Mania season, and he is being considered for a world title match. So that tells you what, you know, what they had in store for him. Mm-hmm. And he's in here with the main event stalwarts and Big Show and Angle. Show still hanging around as well after a very good 03. Good mix of guys, a high-level match on a soft card. So again, they've kind of stacked these two big matches at the end here. And used arguably their top five guys in two matches. Cena gets the final entrance in promo time, which I thought was interesting. So he's pretty red hot here. Comes out
and,
last.
And do you remember the jersey he wore?
Shit. What sport?
Baseball.
This wasn't the Tug McGraw one, right? That was earlier.
No, that was Philly.
Yeah. Crap. I don't know.
Willie McCovey.
Oh, okay, McCovey.
He had an orange Giants Willie McCovey throwback on.
There you go.
Pretty cool.
So, yeah, he gets the final entrance, which is big for him. Show uses his strength against Kurt early as Cena just kind of sits back and roots it on, which I thought was funny. Big Show uses his power against both guys, easily controlling the match. Did you notice Big Show kind of ballooning in size again?
Yes, he was pretty pleasantly plump.
Yeah, he's gotten into decent shape in that 02-03 when he had the jeans and now he's kind of growing back the other way, which is not good.
No.
Good tease with Angle trying to German Big Show off the apron, but that leads to a low blow, and they take Big Show out. Angle gets the Germans on Cena, but Big Show makes it back in time to make the save. Angle eats the post. That gives him a break and lets Cena and Show go at it, where Big Show works him over. It's a basic power offense. A lot of every man for himself. You don't get a lot of teaming up in this one, so not. You get a couple of spots with Angle and Cena working over Show, but not too many. It's a lot of just guys out on their own. Cena hits the FU on Big Show in a great spot, but Kurt comes in and blocks the cover. So now, are you surprised they've given away the spot twice already? Once at Survivor Series and once here? Because when we see it again next month, they make it seem like a huge deal.
No, I didn't have a problem with it.
You don't think it's starting to feel a little ordinary?
Nah, not really. I mean, the reason it didn't feel ordinary is the circumstances with which we needed to have the match, and because you're all thinking to yourself, well, Chris Benoit won the Rumble. He's a SmackDown guy. Why are we worrying about this?
Huh? I'm talking about the FU on Big Show.
No, I was talking about something else. But yes, the FU on Big Show.
Okay. I'll get Aaron tonight. Never mind that event.
No.
Coco goes to that blind dive on Martel.
No, I didn't think so. I didn't think so. It surprised me. I didn't think it happened in that match. But it didn't bother me.
Okay.
It didn't bother me.
Anyway, Angle comes in and blocks the cover there. Sorry I asked. Angle hits the Angle Slam on Big Show, but Big Show kicks out. Big Show breaks up the ankle lock on Cena, hits a choke slam on Angle, and then hits a choke slam on Cena too, but Kurt makes a save and gets the ankle lock on Big Show. I liked the battle there. Show really hung in and eventually powered out. Cena comes back, but the crowd turns on him a little, which surprised me. Cena goes for an FU and Angle, but Show reaches over and smacks his knee, and he collapses. Kurt throws Big Show over the top rope with an angle slam in a cool spot. Kurt then targets the knee of Cena and hits the heel hook ankle lock for the win, where Cena taps. Very good match with a hot finishing sequence. There was a strong win for Kurt to set up Mania and add some intrigue to the main event, too. Because you could see Kurt really going against either of those guys. You could see Brock with the Mania rematch on the line, or you could see Eddie, because he had been kind of mixed in with Eddie and Chavo earlier in the year as well. So kind of adds a little ambiguity there. Were you surprised Cena took the loss?
Yes. Yes. I don't want to say that they tipped their hand in the main event with Kurt winning, because...
I don't think
you really think there was going to be you really thought there could have been a...
No, no. So let me say this. It wouldn't have surprised me if they did it. I didn't think that's where they were going, but would you have been surprised? I mean, they've been the top two guys. Kurt getting another title match. Brock, no one could beat him. Can Kurt be the one that does it? You know, kind of close out their feud from the year before. Like, it wasn't it wasn't completely out of the question.
Okay. I figure, I mean... Sadly, I mean, considering who Brock's been battling with over the past month, I wasn't sure if we were going to get another Brock-Kurt match, to be honest. But
no, I mean, like I said, it didn't seem likely, but it wasn't 100%. To me, it wasn't 100%
obvious. Let's put it this way. I will say this. I think we all knew that the other belt was probably going to be the main event of WrestleMania, so I don't think we were too concerned.
Right.
About what kind of match we were going to get out of this in terms of which two guys. But I had no issue with Kurt winning. And Cena eating the pin. Yeah.
Well, tap, not pin.
I mean, tap. I definitely would have I would have had Big Show tap. I mean...
I don't mind too much. I mean, the heel hook ankle lock is like... I don't know, super protected. So to me, to lose to Angle... Anytime guys tap out to Kurt Angle's ankle lock, I don't feel like... They're getting hosed or jobbed at all.
Right. No, I don't know if they were trying to do some kind of protecting because, you know, Big Show was U.S. champion. I don't think that really even mattered to the equation.
Crossed their mind at all.
No, I don't think so either. So I was a little disappointed. But Kurt winning didn't. All I was saying is I didn't think they were going to do a Brock Kurt 2. But again.
No, I didn't think so either. I mean, whatever. Go back to 2000 when Big Show won that match, and it seemed there's ways they can get around things. So my point was it didn't completely give away, especially because we weren't over the whole glass ceiling thing yet. Like we saw with Benoit at the Rumble, and I think a lot of us here with Eddie. You know, are they really going to do it? Are they going to do it? Can we be sure Brock is still kind of their guy? And you know, was it out of the question that Angle wins this, and then we still get Goldberg Brock for the title? Maybe where something happens where Goldberg gets put in the match, and Angle gets screwed. Like. At this point, it wasn't lock, stock, and barrel that this is what they were going with. This guy wins a number one contender match. This guy's the champion. Here's where it is. So there was still some ambiguity there.
Right.
So I don't think it made it as obvious as it seems.
Hmm. Great match, though. Great match. But it didn't bother me that Kurt won. Because I had an interesting feeling about where the title was going between, 28 days. You know, this is a rare time that we had like normal average... gap between pay-per-views. This wasn't like normal February to Mania where we had 7-8 weeks. We only had 4. So, they couldn't really go too nuts.
Right.
So, even with Kurt winning, the possibility of him fighting Brock again, I'll say, I guess the percentage, objectively, the percentage was kind of high because they didn't really have a lot of time to futz around. So, I don't know if this does tip the hat to the main event. Maybe not, but... But again, we weren't dealing with 7 or 8 weeks of build for Mania where you can kind of play around a bit. But great match. Kurt Angle, number one contender.
Yeah, it was a very good match. I really enjoyed it.
It was a very good match. And Kurt Angle is your number one contender and will face either Brock Lesnar or Eddie Guerrero on March 14th in the home office. Speaking of, we've arrived at our main event, the match that pretty much this show... is predicated on, because the undercard is quite forgettable. How do we get to these two getting here? It was actually pretty cool, a cool way of getting about it. JR, tell us about it.
On the January 25th Raw, Chris Benoit came out and announced his intention would be to challenge Triple H for the World Heavyweight title, meaning the SmackDown side still had to determine their championship match at the biggest show of the year.
What did he do?
He challenged Triple H for WrestleMania.
The meaning other was, guy?
Meaning
the
he was going show? To Raw. He had his choice, and he chooses Raw. As mentioned above, Kurt Angle earned one of those slots, but question would be remained to who would he face for the gold. On 129, Paul Heyman announced that a special 15-man SmackDown Royal Rumble would take place to see who would face Brock at the pay-per-view. The winner of the match would go to WrestleMania as champion. After a great 37 minutes, Eddie Guerrero hung on and eliminated Kurt Angle. After years of great matches, political turmoil, and personal tragedy, Guerrero would finally get his chance at a World Heavyweight title. The next week, the two men had a great verbal battle that ended with Eddie decking Lesnar and putting the belt around his waist. The next week, Brock delivered a classic SmackDown moment. When they returned from commercial, Mariachi Band was in the ring, and Brock emerged wearing a sombrero, did a funny Mexican jig. Lesnar announced that he was holding a celebration for Eddie because at No Way Out, he would have nothing left to celebrate. Eddie quickly came out and ran off the band, but what ensued was a tremendous promo by both men, bringing up Eddie's past addictions and using them to put over the importance of the match and Eddie's quest for the title. It was a great piece of work and really added a lot of heat to the contest. Later that night, Eddie teamed up with Angle to face off with Brock and Big Show. Eddie upset the champ by pinning him with a low blow and roll-up. So see, Scott, that's kind of another hint that maybe made you think maybe Eddie wouldn't win because he got the win going into the go-home show. So
it's quite true.
Big-time main event. Eddie's been heated way back up after kind of tapering off in the fall. He's super over here. Won that pretty fun SmackDown Rumble that we talked about. Lots of excitement for this match. Very emotional storyline with all of Eddie's redemption story mixed in. Brock goes right to the power game. Eddie gets nice flurries. We get a nasty spot as Brock catches Eddie off the top. It drops him on his neck and then does an airplane spin out of it. It wasn't quite an airplane spin. It was more like a hybrid giant swing that Cesaro does, but not really completely all the way out. Brock goes into suplex mode from there. Gets a really cool high-running knee in the corner. Really drilled Eddie in the face. Eddie starts to work Brock's knee. Brock fights his way into the rare choke that we saw at the Rumble. Brock has great explosive shots to cut off Eddie's comebacks. Brock starts targeting the midsection, but finally makes an error when he tries another charging knee in the corner, but Eddie ducks and Brock crashes to the floor. Eddie hits some desperation moves until Brock gets a stun gun. The heat's building really well here, and the crowd is starting to get nervous. You can kind of feel them waiting to see what was going to happen, and you kind of get like a nervous feeling in the audience. Eddie gets a great counter out of a mount position, and he locks in the STF, but Brock powers out. Eddie keeps going for different leg submissions, but Brock fights through them all. Goes back to his suplexes. Great back and forth with Brock snapping a spine buster for a near fall. Eddie takes chances when he gets the opening, but few have connected. And he finally gets an opening, but then whiffs on a missile dropkick. Brock goes back to work in the midsection. Eddie comes back with a bunch of dramatic headbutts and then goes to the knee. Eddie gets the three amigos, but comes up empty on the frog splash. Good tease there. Many thought that would probably be it. Brock hits the F5, but the ref gets knocked out. Brock grabs the title to use as a weapon, but Goldberg comes out to a huge pop, hits the spear, and leaves. Brock kicks out of the cover, and Scott, I like this here, because you know Chad asked us earlier today that we feel that Goldberg's interference affected the end of the match, so we'll talk about that in a second. Brock ducks a belt shot, but Eddie reverses the F5 with the DDT onto the title, and then hits the frog splash and wins to a huge pop. Great, perfect booking. Sets up Mania, gives Eddie a win on his own. Classic match. I thought it was an all-time right out of the gate, a great feel-good moment. Eddie celebrates in the crowd. A great job by Brock to put him over so well. A one-match card across the board, but really delivers big time. Awesome moments and a very, very emotional. So let's talk about that first point, the Goldberg coming in. Did you feel that Goldberg interference took away from Eddie winning the title?
Absolutely not. And I'm not going to steal your point that you said to Chad, so I'll use a different point. Because you made a great point when to respond to that, because it wasn't the immediate cause of the effect, which would have been the pin. I don't think it's that big a deal because Brock does kick out of the spear that was it was like Triple H's pedigree at 19. It was like 50 seconds or something.
Right.
So it wasn't that big a deal for me.
Yeah, Brock kicks out.
Yeah.
And then Eddie, then they go back and forth a little bit more. Brock gets a little offense. So, I mean, it may have weakened him.
Mm-hmm.
But that's
it. But
Eddie.
It wasn't the direct result.
Right. That's Eddie. He cheats anyway.
Yeah. But, however you do it, doesn't matter to him. The end, right. Eddie Guerrero is the master.
And what he
the
did
end,
wasn't even that bad. And what he did wasn't even that bad.
He just speared him.
It didn't. If he pinned him right off the spear, I think it wouldn't have felt as good. But he still hit his finisher minutes later after Brock came back.
And it was a cool moment because had Goldberg come from his seat then it would have. Right. I think then it would have killed it. Like, oh, well, if he's sitting there, you know he's going to interfere. But the fact they did it earlier in the show and then he wasn't even on camera.
Yeah. And that's why I like the whole thing with him getting arrested and thrown out.
Right. Yep. I do too. This is a fantastic match.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely fantastic. And perfect psychology, JR. Perfect storytelling here because a good long Brock match needs to include pretty much him beating the shit out of whoever and trying to make comebacks. And Eddie tried to make as many as he could.
Well, what
Brock
I liked is
did what he does best.
And what I liked was Eddie kept making these comebacks, but he kept like he'd get a few shots in, but then whiff on the big spot. Like he kept trying to throw himself at Brock, and he kept screwing up. And then he finally makes a count at the end. So he has a couple, and the last one that fails, but he got close on is when he misses the frog splash. Like each time he gets a little bit closer, but keeps coming up just short. And Brock was able to duck him every time. And then finally, that last one, Eddie doesn't waste. Does this match work if it's not Eddie as well? Like, was his story so perfect heading in here? Basically, was it a great match, or was it even better? Was it made great because of the moment, or was it great either way?
Oh, it was great either way.
Okay.
Because you're talking about two fantastic workers, two different styles that meshed perfectly. The backstory doesn't hurt. But no, I think you're dealing with two exemplary guys who know how to tell a story. Brock, the big, you know, going back to his 2002 persona of just being a monster, and Eddie, you know, being the plucky underdog who's trying to, you know, lie, cheat, and steal, which is what the fans wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it stiffs anything at all. It was a well-told story. Two guys with great psychology.
And Eddie
30
was so
minutes
loved.
And 7 seconds.
And
it was
Eddie,
fantastic.
Eddie was so beloved that
yeah.
Yep. Like everyone was thrilled to see it happen. Everyone wanted it so bad. As much as Brock is impressive and people are fans of Brock, and he's had a great run. I mean, Eddie was a guy to beat him here. Are you surprised they did it here and not at Mania? I remember at the time being very surprised.
Would you have had a rematch, or would you have just had Brock face somebody else?
I would have Brock face someone else here, and then Eddie get his big one at Mania. I'm not saying I would have done that. At the time, I thought that's what they were going to do. In retrospect, I'm fine with it because we see what happens the next year. We'll get way ahead now, but where one guy's win gets marginalized because they had two of them. So would Eddie have gotten marginalized if he wins, and then if Chris Benoit did cash in and win later in the night, would we have forgotten Eddie's win?
Yes.
Was it better to have his own show and moment here?
Yes, because then it makes what happens at the end of Mania that much more special. So I didn't have a problem with it. Worked perfectly.
So do you feel this match made this card worth it?
Yes.
Because it was a short show. It was like 2.5 hours or whatever.
Yeah,
and
I noticed that today.
Half hour of the show.
2:28:50, I think, was the runtime of the file on the network. So I'm like, wow.
Yeah, so this takes up a real 1/5 of the show, basically.
Yeah. No, I thought it was pretty cool. I thought it was fine. The undercard wasn't offensive, but it wasn't. I mean, it wasn't the greatest undercard ever, but it was fine to watch to get to the fantastic main event.
Right. I mean, it was nothing awful, but yeah. I mean, outside of the triple threat and the cruiserweight, the last three matches are pretty. Even Holly actually. If you start with Holly, if it was a 2-hour show like the old days, and you had that started with the Holly match, and those were the four matches, it would have been a pretty good card actually.
Yeah, it would have been a fantastic card. Yeah, definitely.
This is the beginning's a little shaky.
Yeah.
Are you surprised they went through with it? That Eddie beat Brock Lesnar?
No. In retrospect, no. At the time, a little, yeah. Now, it didn't tip my hand, although we kind of knew what was going to happen at Mania. But at the same time, you knew that Kurt and Eddie were a perfect pair, working well together in the past. Not a lot, but a little bit. And now really going to be on a collision course. I think it would have made Mania, I think it was setting Mania up to be a great double main event. Even though we didn't even know the full extent of the other title match. But no, I think it's a moment that will stand the test of time. Does it make the show as a whole memorable? No. But I would recommend watching it just to get the full effect of the crowd building. And they had a couple of vignettes in between setting up the match. They made a big deal out of it. It wasn't just like, oh, Brock's just facing some guy. They made a big deal out of it. They made a big deal out of that I think leads you to believe Eddie was going to win. So I don't know if they tipped it totally per se, but...
Right. I mean, you could feel it building. So this is two straight shows now where they've really delivered on two favorites getting their big moment. So yep. I remember it just felt like a really weird time. This was kind of like, what the hell's going on?
I know, really. Yeah.
Benoit wins the Rumble. Eddie wins the title. And now we got one more to go with Benoit challenging for the world title WrestleMania, which we'll cover in a couple weeks.
Yep.
So yeah, you know, okay show across the board, completely carried by the top couple matches, specifically in the main event. Eddie Guerrero, your new WWE champion, the official gold belt, not the the old WCW one. He's got the lineage one for WWE's purposes. Now reigning on top, maybe one of the most unlikely WWE champions of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right, Scott, so that will do it for this show.
That was an express line. Move swiftly.
Well, you know what? They want to put on a short pay-per-view. We'll have a short podcast reviewing it.
Exactly. Precisely.
All right, we'd be back on Friday night. Because, mm-hmm. Scott, I guess we should kind of catch everyone up now. We get some time.
Yes.
New schedule in effect starting this week. So what's going on here is... stuff going on in the personal lives, everything else and whatnots. We're going to try and mix things up a little bit. So this Friday night, we'll be doing the network live watch for Saturday Night Main Event number 5. Aaron George Gerbolino, Dr. G, and Jason Greenhouse will be with us as we check that one out.
Mm-hmm.
Going forward, every other Monday will be the Kevin Kelly Show, alternating with PTB, mainly Vintage Vaults, every Monday, every other Monday. Main Event, for now, will remain in its Wednesday night slot every other week, the same weeks as Kevin.
Yep.
And then the other PTB show will be up late Friday nights. So no more PTB Wednesdays, and Kevin Kelly moves to Monday. So PTB will be every other Monday, alternating with the Kevin Kelly Show. Main Event will be every other Wednesday, and then PTB will be every Friday night. Will be your weekly dose, so... If you need me to re-explain that to you, send me a message and I can. But going forward, that's what it'll be. So you'll get three different nights one week and then two the other. So PTB weeks, you get Monday, Friday. Kevin Main Event weeks, you get Monday, Wednesday, Friday will be the schedule there. So just to catch you up, next week on Monday night, we have Kevin Kelly, episode 28 with B. Brian Blair. He'll be joining us to talk Cauliflower Alley Club and, of course, a little bit about his career and what he's up to now.
Mm-hmm.
Main Event will be Wednesday night, episode 27. I think you're still working out the kinks of that.
Maybe I'll invite someone who lives outside of this continental United States.
Yes. Give Andrew Reach the boot. Network Live Watch next Friday night, Nitro, October 30th and November 6th. And then two Mondays from tonight, February 16th, will be President's Day. We'll be talking WrestleMania 20 with special guest Mark Clare, who was with us that night inside Madison Square Garden.
Yes.
And then that Friday, Scott, maybe the elusive. We'll see if we finally get to it. All-time pay-per-view card, November, December. So there's your next couple of weeks. For Nitro, I'll have to try and get Will back. I'll have to shoot him a message, see if he wants to do it.
Yes.
All right, there you go. That is...
And before we go, let's turn the corner. This week, we will have episodes of Extra Point and The Lounge. So if you want a disgusting, gross Belichick love fest, check out The Lounge. But if you want objective, hard-hitting... post Super Bowl coverage, the doctor and I will have it for you on Extra Point.
There you go.
You can come on our show this week because I know you want nothing to do with that other one.
I want nothing to do with any of you. You're all sick to me. I think I'd rather talk Patriots than stupid fucking Giants at this point anyway.
Oh, no, I don't believe that. That's a lie.
They all suck. All right, we're out. We'll talk to you Friday night, Saturday's Main Event. Be here. And then we'll talk to you in September. And then we're gone until November.